Blog Talk Radio.
Can you feel it? We got just 12 games remaining in the Major League Baseball season, thereabouts. And I'm telling you, it's really, really getting exciting, as we have been saying here for so many weeks, right here on Frat House Sports' Cleanup Hitters program. Coming to you here this evening on September 22nd, I believe this is the first day of fall. It felt it a little bit here at Frat House Sports today, just a little bit, and you can bet that within the next 12 games or so, it'll really be feeling like it as we, get ourselves ready for a little bit of October baseball. And my gosh, we're going to be going over it all, and just like last week, yes, we are a week closer, I suppose. I'm not sure if everything is completely worked out in all of our minds yet, as far as how the playoffs are going to look or who's going to get in or who's going to be seated where, because my goodness gracious, the Chicago Cubs suddenly are looking like, I don't know, could they end up being the first wild card team and overtake the Pittsburgh Pirates? Well, we'll get into that one. We've got a three-game do-or-die series going on. Here we go again. Yankees and the Toronto Blue Jays, we got a three-game series going on. Well, right now, actually. I think we're in game two of that three-gamer. Some are saying it's now do-or-die time for the New York Yankees. Let me do this. Let me get around to our regular panel, and boy, it's a thrill for us to have in the house with us here. We got Sean. Sean, how we doing, buddy?
Good, Fred. How's Mike? How you doing?
Real good. Real good. Now, you were in Texas last week, and I think at the time we went to air, I think it was last Tuesday, you were actually indicating to us that you were at a Rangers game. Is that right?
I was. I was actually at the game where the Rangers overtook the Astros for first place.
It was
an exciting game, I must say. It was cool. Even though I'm a hometown Phillies fan, it was cool to be there with a fan base, seeing their team, finally taking control of the division. It was quite a sight to behold.
Now, is that your first time to that stadium?
Yes. It's, I want to say, my first time ever in a stadium besides Citizens Bank Park.
Okay.
I want to say. Okay. I don't think I've been to any, but with this whole new traveling job, I'm going to try to see if I can make it out to a lot of the ballparks.
Right. Well, and depending on how long that lasts, you've got 12 days.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you better hope that all the towns you're going to, they're in the playoffs. I mean, that's what you better be up for. get to Chicago or New York and you might be in good shape.
Funny story. I'm going to be in Chicago in, I think, 2 weeks. So, if they make it through to the playoffs and they're playing some home games, maybe I'll get the opportunity to catch one.
That would be awesome. Get over to Wrigley Field.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you got me beat. I've been to a couple of stadiums, a couple of ballparks. Not a heck of a lot myself, but a couple of them. And let's see, how many have I been to? Oh, three outside of three, maybe four outside of Citizens Bank. But you got me beat there with Texas. And if you get to Wrigley, wow, that I would love to go to Wrigley. I also want to get to Boston badly as well. Let's get Nick in here as well, and we'll find out. We'll get to Nick's travel log. Nick, where have you been outside of Citizens Bank Park?
That's pretty much it, major league-wise. Been to a couple minor league stadiums. Since I was little, I've really wanted to do one of those baseball road trips, you know, just take out a couple weeks at different times and knock out one division or geographically a couple stadiums at a time. Never really got around to it, though. So, but I have been to a couple minor league ballparks, if that counts for anything.
I think you've got some time, Nick.
You know what? I've been to two spring training stadiums as well. I went to Lakeland, that's Detroit,
right,
and Clearwater, that's Philly.
Yeah, well, you got, like I said, you got some time. See, now, somebody like myself, you know, my time's a little bit shorter, but I think you might be in good shape. You got, you know, you got a lot of time there to get around to as many as you need to. We are going to be getting into all of the baseball issues that matter for the moment as we sit here, as I'm talking, as I just pointed out, about 12 games thereabouts remaining in the major league season. And if anybody out there wants to jump in with us, please don't hesitate to do so. 347-826-9964. 347-826-9964. If you are on a computer and you're listening to us that way and you are Skype capable, hit the Skype button. It'll put you through to us loud and clear. Otherwise, jump in the chat room. I see we got a couple of people over there right now. Thank you. And or you can hit me up on Twitter at Frat House Mike. Shortly here, I'll be putting out our weekly Major League Baseball Twitter poll question in a couple of moments. But let's do this. As we have a practice of doing, we got to get over and we got to check out what's going on in the world of live baseball, and that means I need to borrow Caleb's sports machine. Come on, Caleb's sports machine. There
tonight,
we go.
Through the use of the sports machine.
Running a little slow there, but that's okay. All right. Well, look, I mentioned it at the top of the program. We've got a big matchup coming up here in, I guess, just a couple of moments. In fact, it just got underway. The New York Yankees are up in Toronto. They are playing the Toronto Blue Jays. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe last night they lost the first game of that three-game series. If somebody's got a score on that one, because I'm just looking at the current score, so if somebody's got a score on that, but I'm almost positive they lost that one last night. But they lost. We're in game two. We're in game two right now of a three-gamer in Toronto, and many are saying that's a do-or-die situation for the Yankees. We'll talk about that one here momentarily. Top of the first right now, the Baltimore Orioles are in Washington. Oh, there's a nice regional matchup for you. That's very cool. Right now, and obviously there's no score on that game at this particular time. All of these games just started. Top of the first, the Chicago White Sox are in Detroit to play the Detroit Tigers. 7:10 start. Tampa Bay Rays are up in Boston. 7:10 Atlanta Braves are in New York to play the Mets. 7:10 Philadelphia Phillies are in Miami to play the Marlins. Those are your 7 o'clock games, and we'll try to keep you. Well, we'll particularly try to keep you up to date with the Yankees and Toronto Blue Jays and the Toronto Blue Jays score. Yeah, we are getting a little bit of feedback there. I'm not sure. I'm not sure whose side that's on. I was just checking Sean. I closed Sean down. I don't know. Nick, that might be that little bit of feedback that you're hearing might be coming off of your side. You might want to just check your connections on that one. Anyhow.
By the way, Frat House Mike, the Yankees did lose last night 4-3.
Yeah, yep, that's what I thought. I thought I saw that. I saw that earlier today. So in essence, let's see, that, where does that put the Yankees right now? The Yankees are 3.5 games out of first place. Obviously, as we've talked about so many times before, they're in the driver's seat. They're going to be the number one seed, no doubt, for the wild card game. But at this point right now, it's been kind of fun to watch the whole Yankees Blue Jays dynamic go on amongst itself in the past 3 to 4 weeks. We'll see how it goes. I mean, really, if the Yankees, I would have to say, this is do or die for the Yankees, right, guys? I mean, they got to win today. They got to win tomorrow. They got to win those two in order to maintain any conversation, I would think, for the remainder of the season for potentially winning the AL East. Yes?
Agreed. You can't let the Blue Jays pull too far ahead with this series. I mean, now it's every game counts for a full game, when normally a Blue Jays win and the Yankees loss is kind of a half a game, and you have an opportunity to win. Even if the Blue Jays win, you can make up for it. This, I mean, everybody knows how big divisional games, how much divisional games impact the standings. This is a huge series, and like you said, I think it's do or die for the Yankees. For the Blue Jays, not so much, but if the Blue Jays can pull away with a series win here, I think the division's just about wrapped up.
The power rankings came out the other day, obviously. The only reason I bring it up is because I think that it is, I think it's rather interesting. We've got the entire representation of the NL Central at the very top of the power rankings, according to USA Today. St. Louis 1, Pittsburgh 2. There's the Cubs at number 3. And I was just mentioning the Cubs. The Cubs right now are just 2 games behind second place Pittsburgh. And they've got an important series coming up against the Pirates this coming weekend. This has suddenly gotten a little bit intriguing now, hasn't it? I understand both of them are going to be a wild card team. That's probably the way it's going to go. Both of them are probably going to be a wild card team. But if I'm not mistaken, if you're the number one wild card team, you've got a home field advantage, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, obviously, this is something that the Cubs are going to want to be fighting for. If they could overcome Pittsburgh and take over the second place in the Central Division, they'll get that, and that's going to be important. Home field could be very, very important when you're talking about a one-game play-in. So this has gotten interesting. So the Cubs are up there. The Toronto Blue Jays dropped back to number 4. They dropped back a spot. Kansas City Royals dropped down a spot to number 5. Houston Astros, by suddenly being knocked out of the lead in the AL West, have dropped all the way back on the power rankings to number 10 for USA Today. Any thoughts right now, guys, on this Astros situation? I didn't, frankly, see this one coming. I don't know. I didn't see this one coming. Any thoughts on this?
I'm with you guys. Go ahead, Sean.
I was going to say, Mike, I'm in the same boat as you. I mean, like I said, that game that I saw was ecstatic because I don't think – me personally, anyone on the panel, or anyone, especially fans of the Astros, seeing the Texas Rangers coming back and actually taking over the lead in the division. So, I mean, the Astros are looking good. I mean, either one of these teams could make the playoffs, but the Angels are right on their tails, too. I mean, the Angels are only 3.5 games behind in the wild card, and they have a series coming up against Houston next week, at the beginning of next week, that could also change around the standings even more. So I think the whole top of this division is still up in the air. I mean, with the series against Texas and Houston this weekend, and then following Houston and the Angels at the beginning of next week, we could see a lot of movement in the West, in the AL West, within the next week or so.
Texas and Houston right now are virtually tied in the win column. It's in the loss column, where Houston's got 2 more than Texas. So Texas, it appears, does probably have at least a game in hand on the Astros, at least the game in hand. Thoughts on Texas and the Astros, Nick?
It's still tight. Right now it kind of looks like it's leaning the Rangers' way, which I guess that could be enough to say that the Rangers, I don't want to say have the division wrapped up. I mean, obviously it's a one-game lead, but that could be enough to persuade someone towards picking the Rangers. I mean, there's such little time left in the season that any bit of momentum is a huge deal, especially when the division's this tight. But by the same token, the Astros are still right there. A couple wins the other way. I mean, the Astros have now won their last three. Maybe they're picking it up a little bit. A little bit of momentum by the Astros, and they're right back at the top of the division. I think one of the real interesting things to watch in this division is how long it takes or how much longer the Angels fight. See if they try to force their way towards the top, overcome the Astros and the Rangers. I mean, it's a long way with, like I said, such little time left in the season. But I mean, this is still a three horse race, I think. And if you're gonna discount the Angels, which is completely fine to do, there's a lot of hysteria around the Rangers right now, and rightfully so. But it's very easy to forget that it's only a one game lead. That said, same number of wins. The Astros have two more losses, so the Rangers have two extra games here to pick up some extra wins left in the season. And I think – I forget who mentioned it on last week's show. The Astros don't play well on the road, so we'll see how that comes into play in the final weeks of the season. But it's still really tight. It's still down to a game, and I think it'll be interesting to watch. And I just feel like a lot of the media is kind of riding the Rangers right now, saying this team, look, they overtook the division, and now it's theirs. They did overtake the division. It's there if they want it, but I wouldn't exactly say that the AL West is the Rangers just yet. The Astros, literally, this will now be maybe the fourth time I said it, just in this little monologue. The Astros are literally a game behind. They're one game back, and they have the same number of wins. So I think it's still a toss up. I don't see either team significantly outperforming the other. Lately, the Rangers are probably playing better, so I can tip my hand towards them. But it's not over for the Astros. It's far from over for the Astros. I think it's still a really, really tight race, and I still believe it'll come down to the final couple games of the season.
I know that we did a little bit of this. We did a little bit of this last week, looking at schedules and matching up the schedules head-to-head. Let's entertain that exercise here for a moment with these three teams, the Astros, the Rangers, and the Angels. Where are the Astros right now? They are at home, and they're right now in the second game of a three-game series with the LA Angels. They won last night against the Angels 6-3. They've got tonight and they've got tomorrow night at home against the Angels. They're going to have three games. Oh, boy. They're going to have three games this weekend against the Texas Rangers at home. This is going to get as interesting as the AL East, isn't it? Honest to God. So we've got three games then this weekend at home against the Rangers. They're going to go out on the road. They're going to play three games against the Mariners, probably four games, three games, and then they will close the season the following weekend in Arizona. Three games against the Diamondbacks. Now, for the Rangers, as we just pointed out, let's see, where are we right now? The Rangers are opening a series right now against the Oakland Athletics. They're in Oakland. So you got three against Oakland starting tonight. They're going to go to Houston. They're going to play three, as I just pointed out, in Houston. They're going to come home. They've got, is it three or is it four? Let me jump to October. They're going to have three against the Detroit Tigers, and then they will have four to close out the season against the Los Angeles Angels. Oh, my gosh. I'm not joking. This couldn't get any crazier. Now, the Angels, as I just mentioned, are in the second game of a three-gamer in Houston. They're going to come home. They've got three games against the Mariners this coming weekend. They then have three games at home against the Oakland A's. and they will close out the season. There you go, on the road against. This is going to get. I don't even know if I can go anywhere near this one. This is insane. The AL West, I think, might be just as compelling. It might actually turn out to be more so than the AL East. Honestly, I don't know. I don't know if I even want to make any predictions on it. Anybody want to venture into that department?
Based on the preseason predictions that you sent us back over, I don't want to be making any more predictions with, you know, how those turned out.
Let's just see. Just for the fun of it, let's see. AL West. Let's see. Nick had Seattle, the Angels, Oakland, Houston, and Texas.
I'll be the earliest journalist to retire at the age of 19.
We got crickets. I had the Angels, Seattle, oh my gosh, Oakland, Houston, Texas.
Oh.
Caleb had Seattle, the Angels, Oakland, Texas, Houston. All a little bit different.
We couldn't do diddly poo.
No, we couldn't. Man alive. Okay. Well, anyhow.
One other thing I'd like to point out here, Mike, because I saw you post something about it on social media about the Phillies reaching 100 losses, which is a possibility at 94 losses currently. I did a little bit of research. The last time it happened was in 2003. The Detroit Tigers went 43-119. So the Phillies would be the first team since 2003 to reach 100 losses. Also, I'd like to point out that if they do reach 100 losses this season, in the modern era, which they consider 1900s to the present, Philadelphia teams, because it also includes the Philadelphia Athletics, will have made up 10 out of 21 100-loss seasons in the modern era of baseball. 10 out of 21 Philadelphia teams. Oops.
Oops is right. Yeah. Well, you know, I think we all remember, some of us probably remember. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. I'm trying to remember what year it was. Let me think now. 2006, 2007, perhaps, when the Phils became the losingest team ever in the history of Major League Baseball. I forget how many losses that number was. But I thought you were actually going to bring up Sean, the last time that the Phils recorded a 100 loss season.
Well, I can give you that too if you give me a second.
No, in fact, I got the numbers up here. It was 1961. I had that number up. I had that number up, I believe, on social media the other day as well. So that actually predates my arriving to this earth. So I have never seen a Philadelphia Phils team with a 100 loss season. It's never happened in my lifetime. And thank you for the got a little bit of tap playing. Oh, awesome. Well, We did mention that Pete McCannon, I want to get everybody's initial impression on this real quick, and then we'll run around to some of the other big stories, because we won't spend a lot of time on this. But it was announced today that Phillies manager Pete McCannon had been extended, his contract had been extended through 2016 with an option for 2017. And I want to get everybody, since we are all Phils fans here, I want to get everybody's initial impression on that, and then I will give you mine. What's the impression? Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, I'll go first. I mean, you guys know I like Pete MacKinnon as a manager. I think he's done a decent job with this ball club, given the lack of talent and names that they have on this team. When they fired Sandberg and they went on that stretch for about a month after the All-Star break, we were talking about the Philly short stint of success. And, I mean, I'll stick to it. I think he did a good job, and he proved my point that the Phillies are a bad team, but there's other teams across the league that are not that much better but have however many more wins, 10, 15 more wins. So people didn't want to really put any blame on Sandberg or, you know, how can you win with this kind of team? MacKinnon did that for a little while, and granted, the team still stinks, but you see positives. You saw a little bit of Charlie Manuel in him the other day when, who was it, Herrera threw a hissy fit on the field and he was benched the next inning. I mean, I like what he's got. I'd like to see what he can do once the team's in a position where they can move forward and start to win. And I honestly think that's a lot closer than people believe. The only question it raises, or the only question I'm going to raise, is it's a little disconcerting that they hire the manager or figure out who the manager is going to be moving forward before the GM. Yeah, I don't think it's the end of the world. I think it'll, you know, it'll work itself out, and it's not going to make or break the future of this team. But my perception was more that they were going to find a GM and have the GM put a little bit of say, put his two cents into who the manager will be. Again, I like Pete MacKinnon. I'm happy for him, and I'm not upset that he's going to be the manager moving forward. I really do like him. It was a little bit of a shock when they did they made a move for the manager position before they made a move for the GM position.
Sean, what was your gut reaction when you first heard this one?
Well, I was at work when it happened, so I was a little interested to see the story. But yeah, I was a little questionable about the decision. I mean, I figured, you know, with the whole change in the front office, you know, Ruben Amaro is gone now. They're trying to change the scheme of things upstairs in the Phillies organization. I thought that maybe, you know, they would overhaul the whole thing and they would actually take a look in the offseason, see what was out there, and hire a manager from outside. Like Nick was saying before, though, I don't have a problem with MacKinnon going into the next season. I just think it's an interesting decision and maybe a little early of a decision. If they could have went into the off season and maybe thought about it, talked about it a little bit more, and then, you know, made a decision from there. I think it was a little spur of the moment decision. That's why I was so shocked when I was sitting at work. I saw a story about Pete MacKinnon being being announced for the manager of 2016 with an option for 2017.
Your reaction, Sean, was identical to mine, and basically mine was, why? I mean, why? Why are you doing this? Let the season finish out. Do a thorough search. Ruben Amaro is gone. That gave a lot of people, at least I think in the fan base, many of us, it gave us a moment of pause to say, okay, maybe this team's going to really, really turn things around. There's been no evidence that there's been a thorough search done for a manager, and I'm not taking anything away from Pete MacKinnon. And I don't want anybody reading it that way, that I'm dissing the guy or anything. I'm not. But I just kind of thought to myself, you're a team that's, as we just pointed out, potentially going to lose 100 games for the first time in over 50 years. What's the rush? Finish the season out. Winter meetings don't come up until when? December, I believe? All right, you're probably going to want a manager, you know, named and probably up and operating by about that point. So get one, you know, you got time. You got time in October, November, whatever, to be looking around for a manager. Why? And, you know, just when you start to think that maybe this team truly is going to kind of change things a little bit, you know, we got McPhail in there. You got what's his name, who's been coming out more frequently and becoming, you know, an owner face to the Middleton has been coming out and being more of an owner face to the team. And you start to get this feeling that, okay, the Phils are galvanizing the upper management, and they're really starting to, hey, they're gonna start to operate more like a real Major League Baseball team. And then they go and do something like this, and I sit back and I go, huh? What? I don't know. I know Rick on Deck is a Phils fan, so we got to get his thoughts on this one. Rick?
Hey, how's it going, Mike?
real good, man. What was your thoughts? What were your thoughts on McCannon being named, the manager for all of next season and potentially even into 17?
Well, I think that, I had a similar reaction to you. I don't know why they had to do it now. It seems like, I'm not sure what it is about Philadelphia, but it always seems like we kind of jump the gun on things and we don't let things play out and kind of,
you know, like
take
Chip
our
Kelly?
Time and...
You mean like Chip
what's
Kelly?
That?
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking more along the Phillies lines of signing Ryan Howard ahead of schedule, of, some of the other moves that we've made without, you know, really letting things play out and really getting the whole, you know, the whole background on your decisions. The other thing that I thought was kind of odd about the Pete McCannon signing was that it's a one-year deal. I mean, I don't know if he's got an option for 2017, because you kind of alluded to he might be there for 2017 as well, but I heard it was a one-year deal, and that kind of made me scratch my head, because it's like, okay, you're putting this guy in position, but it's not exactly a vote of confidence if you're giving him 1 year. So that was kind of head-scratching to me, and I'm thinking, well, what that says to me is you're looking at 2016 as kind of like a transition year. So, you know, McCannon
exactly.
has a good relationship. You know, McCannon has a good relationship with the players. So I think that, you know, they'll buy into whatever your plan is for next year, and then you're going to go and make your major decision, you know, in the 2017 season, because hopefully by then some of your young players have been cultivated and they're ready to, you know, maybe make a push into the majors, and maybe that's when you go and get your guy. But it is kind of strange, the timing and also the length of the contract. It just, to me, it speaks that, like, hey, we're already giving up on 2016, and it's going to be a transition year, so we don't want to make a major, you know, move for a manager. We'll just put Pete McCannon in there. He gets along with the players. End of story.
Great point, Rick. And I thought exactly that same thing immediately after I went, why? I'm going, oh, well, this is clearly indicating to me that the Phils are giving up on 16. That what they're saying is...
By my off season.
I think what they're clearly saying is, listen, you know what, guys? We're just going to tread water next year for one more year. And then hopefully after that year, well, then maybe we'll be ready to strike. Well, now, see, from a marketing standpoint, to me, that's a dumb move. Because you haven't even started to gear up for the renewal and new sales of season tickets. How do you sell this to a fan base when it seems to at least some of us that it's clearly evident that what you're doing is you plan on treading water next year? I mean, that just to me, the timing is wrong. Look, even if you're going to do that, even if McCannon was going to be the guy, you could have made that announcement in November before the winter meetings. After baseball season is over, nobody's really thinking about the Phils at that point. We're going to be burying our head in the sand when it comes to the Philadelphia Eagles. Nobody's going to be thinking about that. And see, now to me, it just shown this big glaring spotlight right on the whole motivation. I don't know. See, that's what disappointed me about it. Because aside from the fact that it didn't appear to me that they did their due diligence, it sent a signal to me that they're still making mistakes when it comes to just how to properly market the team. And they seem to be taking things for granted again, one more time. I don't know. That's what. And again, you know, look, I don't want to take anything away from Pete Buchanan. And you know, it might sound like I'm like I don't like the guy, or you know, I'm dissing him or something. But it's not the case at all. I'm looking at it from just the standpoint of marketing management, and sports management. That's how I'm looking at it.
And I think to circle back to the point that Nick made too about, you know, you would expect them to put maybe a GM in place before they decide on a manager. Again, it's kind of like putting the cart before the horse. And what that tells me is that, you know what, Andy McPhail is going to be running this team, and they're going to bring in another puppet to be GM. They're not going to bring in somebody who's going to have a changed way of thinking. They're going to bring someone in who's similar to Ruben Amaro, who's basically a yes man, who basically is the, you know, the guy out in the media, but Andy McPhail is going to be making decisions behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Nick, go ahead. You got a little bit of breaking news there. We need it. Where's the breaking news? Do we have the breaking news sounder? There we go. Nick, what do you got?
The Marlins are in discussion. We're talking about, it's perfect timing to break this, actually, given the discussion we're having. The Marlins are in discussion with Dusty Baker for their manager job. I love Dusty Baker. My roommate comes in.
So do I.
Sneaks up on me, shows me the alert he got on his phone, and our eyes just lit up. So that would be interesting to bring a veteran manager like Dusty Baker, someone that's got a little bit of a reputation to the town that he's just cursed to never be good at baseball.
I like Dusty Baker as well.
I do.
I like the guy, and I think he would be. I think he'd be an interesting fit. Actually, he might not be with that owner down there. I don't know. Is Dusty Baker going to work with that owner down there?
I don't know. I just love the sweatbands and the toothpick in the dugout. Why is he wearing sweatbands? He's not even playing.
Oh,
fantastic.
Rick O'Deck, what else is on your mind here this evening? What's your thinking with regard to, we just got done talking about this AL West division and how this might actually turn out to be much more compelling than the AL East.
It's amazing how a week of baseball changes things, because we were just talking about this last week, and, you know, we were kind of, I mean, the Angels were kind of like an afterthought, but, you know, they've suddenly gotten back into the picture. The Rangers and the Astros are, you know, beating each other up, but I don't know. The Rangers, they've been there before, and then maybe, you know, they certainly have some different players in the lineup, but the team has been there before. The Astros haven't. I think that's going to start weighing on the Astros a little bit as you come down the stretch, especially if they fall much further behind. And, you know, again, the Astros, poor road team, you know, they just can't afford to get two or three games behind, because I think that's going to start weighing on the fact that, hey, you know what, we haven't made the playoffs in how many years? And Texas, I think, you know, probably has the mindset that, hey, we've been here before, and we can finish this off. But then you've got the Angels, who are kind of like creeping up there. So, yeah, what last week seemed like a two-horse race is suddenly a three-horse race, and it's quite interesting. I mean, it's almost like you guys were saying. I mean, it's as interesting, if not more interesting, than the East at this point.
When you take a look at the East, as we just pointed out, for all intent and purpose, let's just say, and I'm not predicting it or anything, but Toronto already won the first game of a three-game series they've got going right now with the Yankees last night.
Yep.
Let's just say, for instance, that they win tonight and they win tomorrow and they sweep the Yankees. Well, suddenly the AL East isn't as big a conversation. But nope. based on the projected schedule that we just looked at with the Astros, the Rangers, and the Angels, from here until the end of the season, this thing, it's almost, you know, I'm always bleary-eyed looking at it and trying to figure it out. Because there's going to be so much interplay going on between everybody that this thing could, I mean, you know, we could be coming on here a week from now and saying, well, it looks like the Angels might be taking over the AL West. Texas will end up in second and Houston ends up in third. I mean, that's exactly the way this possibly could play out. I mean, that's one scenario. It just is. So, in other words, the Toronto Yankees thing, which has had us all on the edge of our seat now for the better part of, I guess, the past 3 to 4 weeks, now suddenly has been replaced by a storyline over in the West that might actually be much more compelling, particularly in light of the next two games in Toronto. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I think that it is more compelling from the standpoint that Toronto has just seemed to, you know, impress their will over the Yankees. I mean, they in the last couple of series between those teams, I mean, Toronto's dominated the Yankees. So, you know, the head-on-head has, and that's the reason why the division is starting to look more and more like it's going to go Toronto's way. I mean, the head-on-head play has been all Toronto recently. Whereas with the Rangers, the Astros, and the Angels, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, there's a lot of interplay to come, and I don't know that any of those teams have a distinct advantage over the other ones, especially, you know, coming down the stretch. The Rangers have played the best in the last 10, but, again, and that may have included that Houston series that was a little earlier last week, I guess it does, you know, is included in the last 10. So, you know, they had a little bit better of the play of late, and that's shown by their one-game lead. But I still think that Houston has a lot of talent. I just don't know if they quite believe in themselves at this point. If they fall off the pace too much more, I think that they could, you know, fall off enough that they're not going to be able to get back in it.
Well, and it's interesting because Nick just brought it up earlier that it seems that momentum plays a lot bigger role at this time of year in a shorter period of time than it does, obviously, when you're in, say, June, July. You can get momentum, and all of a sudden that thing can propel you. And when we're only talking about a period of about, like I said, 10, 11, 12 games remaining in a season, holy smokes, you know, I'm telling you, we could see, we could be coming back here a week from now and talking about a very, very different looking AL West. That's for sure.
Yep. And I think that you see the light at the end of the tunnel at this point in the season. So if you're the team with the momentum, you're like a snowball rolling downhill. I mean, because you see the end game. And so I would hate to be the team not playing as well because, again, you look at it with, man, we only have so much time left to catch this other team. The other team's steamrolling, you know. They're like, hey, we only have a little bit left to hold on, so let's go out there and play our best ball and, you know, win this thing.
Mm-hmm. If anybody wants to jump in with us, please don't hesitate to do so. 347-826-9964. 347-826-9964 is how you can get us on the cell or on the landline. Otherwise, leave us a comment in the chat room right here at Blog Talk Radio, or you can hit me up over at Twitter, on Twitter, at Frat House Mike, on Twitter, at Frat House Mike, where you can also, if you want, answer our Frat House Sports' MLB poll for the evening, which I'm tweeting out right now, which reads, can the Blue Jays win in postseason without Tulowitzki? Ah, interesting question. We've talked a lot about this Blue Jays team, and let me get everybody's real thoughts on this one because I sent a article out. Oh, where was it from? Let me see here. It was from it was actually from a blog site up in Toronto. I sent an article over to you guys that asked the question. I think it's a legitimate question. Asked the question, can, you know, while it appears that the Toronto Blue Jays are playing quite well, And, of course, then they made that acquisition for Tulowitzki from the Colorado Rockies at the trade deadline. But now, of course, he's out. And it appeared that Tulowitzki really was the thing that kind of springboarded them on their move into this direction. Can they actually win in postseason without him in the lineup? And let me run it around the room real quick. Nick, what's your thoughts?
I don't think it'll affect too much of the division. When it comes to the postseason, I think it does play a difference. People look at his offensive numbers and what he's done in Toronto, and, I mean, I'm not impressed. He's, what, hitting .232 since he joined Toronto. But, I mean, his offensive numbers aren't great, but this is straight from the Blue Jays press notes from for today's game. It says, in 39 games with the Blue Jays, Tulowitzki has 5 defensive runs saved. Prior to his acquisition, Toronto shortstops had -7 defensive runs saved. The Blue Jays own a record of 30-8 when he's in the starting lineup. So the offensive numbers would lead you to believe, yeah, maybe he's not the reason they're kind of pulling away and, like you said, really provided the spark. His offensive numbers are really lackluster, to be quite honest. But you look at the defense and you look at what the team's done regardless of how he's hit, and it's hard to believe that when you take Tulowitzki out of this lineup, both offensively and defensively, that this team is good enough to compete for a World Series. And I shouldn't say good enough to compete for a World Series, but as much of a favorite to compete for a World Series, because before Tulowitzki went down, the Blue Jays were, to a lot of people, the favorite in the AL, to a lot of people. And I think they still are, but you take not just his bat out of the lineup, but his glove and what he's done in the field, what the team's done when he's on the field, regardless of how he's playing, and it's a big loss. And there's a lot of other – I mean, it's the playoffs. It's kind of the definition of the playoffs. But there's a lot of other good teams out there that will take advantage of that, that will take advantage of the fact that there's not a gold glove shortstop over on the left side, that will take advantage of the fact that this team is missing one of their biggest sparks. I don't know. I think without Tulowitzki, I don't know if they can compete throughout all of the playoffs. I think they'll get to the playoffs. I think they'll put up a fight at least in the first round or so. But without Tulo on the field, I'm not so sure that I'm gonna ride him too far. I think there's too many other good teams that are in this playoff system this year that the littlest things, and we talked about this in previous weeks when we talked about how great all these pitching staffs are, that the Pirates, whose pitching staff isn't terrible, but that's like a weakness. That's a weakness, the fact that they have Gerrit Cole, and after Gerrit Cole, it's a bit of a toss up when you're facing them up against the Cardinals or the Mets or whoever else, whatever other pitching staffs you have, the Dodgers, whatever the other pitching staffs you have in the majors, it holds them back a little bit. And I think this is a similar case in that it's a little loss, but you look at, you're taking his lackluster offensive numbers out of the best offensive baseball, and you're going to say, oh, no, they'll be fine. I don't think so, because I think what they lack on defense and what they lack in terms of that spark, Mike, that you mentioned, I think that plays a big factor because, again, in sum, these teams are looking for that one little advantage that they can put over the other teams, and the lack of Tulowitzki might be that for whoever's opposing Toronto.
Now, he broke that shoulder blade, I think it was, what, about a week and a half ago?
September 12th,
September 12th. There's no, at this point right now, there's no timetable for his return, albeit there was a report from over at ESPN today that apparently he is throwing the ball on the sideline at this time. That would have to be clearly a good sign that he's actually able to throw the ball. I'm frankly surprised you could come back from a broken shoulder blade that quickly. I'm kind of with you a little bit, Nick. It was evident that the acquisition of Tulowitzki really jump-started this team suddenly. In the month of August, and then obviously through September, albeit it doesn't appear that they've really lost anything in the past 10 days. I'm just looking at what they're 6-4 in their last 10 games. So it really doesn't appear that they've necessarily lost anything. So, boy, it's a tough one to call, isn't it? Sean, what's your thinking?
Well, people who know me would probably hear me that I don't think one player can ever make any ball club, no matter what sport it is. Sports are a team game. You need everyone to be doing their part. And when one player comes out of the lineup, you should have a guy who can get right up and pick up where he left off. But in this case, I think Tulowitzki is that spark, as Nick and you have both pointed out, that when he's in the lineup, you know, he brings a fire to the team that when he's not on the field isn't necessarily there. I don't believe, though, that Toronto is going to slow down even without Tulowitzki. Like you said, I mean, their numbers aren't showing it. 6-4 in their last 10. So I would have to say that going into the playoffs, I think that Toronto still has a good chance of doing well, even without Tulowitzki. They might struggle a little bit on defense, but, you know, I think they've still got the squad that can go out there and show up come playoff time. I mean, if they weren't, then maybe they would lose maybe they would have lost the division to the Yankees. You know, like they may have been in second right now had they not held on to that fire. So from what they're showing me right now, I think that they can bring a presence to the playoffs even without Tulowitzki. But with Tulowitzki, they would certainly be a World Series contender.
Rick Odek, Sean makes a point, and I hear him. No one player makes a team. But you and I have both seen at different times in our lifetime, sometimes that's not always true. You can lose one player, and boy, oh boy, that's just the end of it.
Yeah.
Particularly at certain times in the calendar year. You lose a guy like that. You lose a guy like that this late in the season. That can have a tremendous impact because you necessarily weren't really planning on it, and you don't have much option to replace them.
Right. And I think that's the key in, you know, what kind of impact it's going to have. Because, I mean, Tulowitzki is a middle-of-the-order batter. So I understand Nick's point about him only batting 230, but I think it's the threat of Tulowitzki in the middle of the order that other people ahead of him are going to be getting better pitches. I think that has the way of, you know, having a domino effect when you take that player out. So it might not be that one player's, you know, performance. It might be how everybody else who's remaining in the lineup, how their performance is affected by not having him in the lineup. So I think that there's definitely an impact there, because I think that Tulowitzki is a major threat in the lineup, and even though he may not be putting up the numbers that people expected when he came over from Toronto, there's obviously something there. And defense is certainly one of those things, but I think leadership is probably another that, you know, you're going to miss not having him in the lineup. Does Toronto or do they have enough to, you know, make a run at the World Series? I think they do. I don't think by any means it's going to be as easy without Tulowitzki. I think, you know, that's a lot to replace in your lineup. And like you said, I don't think they have the horses there that can even give you, you know, a fraction of what Tulowitzki gives you. So you're losing, you know, a pretty big horse there. But I think that they still have enough talent to make a push to the World Series. I think it would be much harder. And I think once they get there, that could be the telling factor if they get there, because they're going to be going up likely against a superior pitching staff, because there's a lot of good pitching staffs in the National League. So I think the team that gets there from the National League is certainly going to have an edge in pitching. So you look to, you know, back when the Phillies won in 2008, they had the big boppers, and they basically, you know, out-hit the Rays in the World Series. They didn't have, when you look at their pitching staff, nothing like some of the latter staffs that they had. I mean, Hamels headed that pitching staff, but they had the bats to be able to get it done. That's where I think it might hurt Toronto, because I think in the AL they probably, you know, have the ability to keep pace without Tulowitzki, but once they get into the World Series, I think it might be a different story.
But even before they get to the World Series, they would have to get through the AL championship. And when you start talking about when you start talking about going up against a team like, say, Kansas City, I don't know. I'm not sure.
And actually, Kansas City was the team that I thought was the most balanced out of all the teams,
exactly.
And I liked them to begin with. I mean, I remember talking about them, you know, months ago when we were talking about, you know, teams to watch, and I just thought that Kansas City was really balanced. I still like them as a team to beat, but I like them even more that Toronto doesn't have Tulowitzki.
Right, exactly. I see. That's why I'm not certain that Toronto even gets out of the AL. Even gets out of the AL. To be honest, I mean, yeah, they might win the first round, as you just pointed out. But then when you're going up in the AL championship, and let's just say you're going up against, and you know, obviously I'm looking at Kansas City for chalk purposes. But you know, you go up against Kansas City. I don't know. All right, Rick on deck. Thanks for joining us again this evening. We appreciate it.
Hey, I just got one parting shot.
Yes, absolutely.
If I can.
Absolutely.
You guys were talking about baseball stadiums that you visited. And I have been to Fenway Park, and it's an awesome place to take in a ball game. And I've been to Camden Yards, and I was at the old Candlestick Park as well.
Old Candlestick, wow. Boy,
you got
a nice one. That's a nice one on the list.
It went back many years to that one, yep.
Wow, that's a nice one. Well, Camden Yards is, without a doubt, one of my all-time favorites. I love Camden Yards. I've said it many times. I like Camden Yards actually better than Citizens Bank. I've been up to Citi Field. Up in New York. I've been to Washington, their new ballpark down there. I'm trying to think. I think I was the one other. But it's not, I'm not remembering it at the moment. But Candlestick, but Fenway is absolutely one I got to get to. Absolutely.
Yeah, I do recommend that. It's just the atmosphere there is awesome. It's an awesome atmosphere.
And Wrigley would be another one high on the list. And it sounds like Sean, do we need to get a GoFundMe? Should we do a GoFundMe to get you there?
Maybe. I mean, yeah, we could do frat house trips. We could go live on site.
Exactly. That's what I'm
That'd
thinking. We get our on the ground guy. Get our on the ground guy. We just do a GoFundMe for Sean to get him over to Wrigley. All right, Rick on deck. Thanks for jumping in. Hey, keep listening because we're going to get into a little bit of we'll get into a little bit of the Matt Harvey drama.
You got it. And have a good night.
All right, take care.
See ya.
All right, there you go. And if anybody else wants to jump in with us, please don't hesitate. As I pointed out, 347-826-9964 is how you can catch up with us here at Frat House Sports. 347-826-9964. Jump in the chat room, leave us a message there, or hit me up over on Twitter at Frat House Mike. Let me see something here. Let me see where I want to go here. Oh, I want to go over to this Matt Harvey thing. What in the world is going on here, guys? Hold on. I got to get this. I got to pull this article up here because I sent this one article over today to you guys. You know, we talked about this a little bit the other day, or the other week, rather. We talked about this the other week. About this whole, is Matt Harvey, is he on, innings counts and all this other nonsense? And Well, now, and it kind of died down a little bit, and I thought it had truly died down, and within the past 2 days, it's all jumped back up again. And now we're getting comments out there from the manager, Terry Collins, and we're getting comments out there from the general manager, Sandy Alderson. And nothing's making any sense to me. Who's calling the shots here? Because, excuse me, at one point, Terry Collins is coming out and making a comment that he wasn't happy about pulling Matt Harvey out of a game, when was it, the other evening, I think on just 5 innings. He wasn't real happy about that. Sandy Alderson's coming out. He's making negative comments about it. What in the – who is calling the shots here? Does anybody have a clear idea?
No,
what
sign the hell of is intelligent life anyway.
No, there doesn't. There absolutely doesn't appear to be any intelligent life. Does anybody have a clear – I mean, is Scott Boras suddenly the manager of this team? Anybody have a clue? Nick, what do you make of all this nonsense?
Mike, I told you this when the story first broke. If they're putting a limit on what Matt Harvey can do, so be it. That's fine. If Scott Boras is putting a limit on what Matt Harvey can do, spitefully, they should pitch him every inning for the rest of the season, because that's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. The doctor and the front office are the only two parties that have any power whatsoever to say when and how long Matt Harvey can pitch. Scott Boras has absolutely zero to do with this. He is one of the biggest villains in baseball out of time, and it strikes again. Because, to be fair, Boras is doing his job. He's protecting one of his commodities. But at the same time, come on. You're an agent. You're a lawyer. That's what you do. You handle the law side of sports, not the on-field side of sports. You don't handle, hey, my client can't pitch today because he's got a big – you know, big career ahead of him, and I don't want him to risk injury. So you risk injury every time you take the field or the court or the pitch or whatever it might be, whatever sport you play, every time you go out there, you risk injury. Every time. The biggest travesty in all of this, the biggest mess, is that it's the PR coverage. It's an absolute mess. Let's get a pitch. You're in a playoff at the beginning of the season. This could be one of the years where it's this year or never again for a while. Just throw them. Win today. Don't worry about anything else. Don't let Scott Boras change your mind. If Sandy Alderson comes out and says, nah, I want to hold on to him for the playoffs, I don't want him pitching, I think we've got the division wrapped up, so be it. So be it. But do not, at any circumstance, let Scott Boras have any say in this situation. Not even a little bit. He deserves no say in the managerial and strategical aspects of this ball club, especially when the Mets are in the position they're in.
There was a comment made and hold on, let me just pull the comment here. There was a comment made by Terry Collins. If it keeps us from winning the pennant, I'm not going to be happy about it. Holy smokes. I mean, it's sounding to me like the Mets are completely out of control with one of their own contracted players. I mean, we got a case here. It sounds to me like the tail wagging the dog. Honest to God, Sean, yeah. Have you been following any of this?
No, because I don't care to be completely honest. But and again, I don't have much to say on the situation. But you know, the Mets are going to have to come to an ultimatum if they want to have a better chance of making it to the World Series. They'll pitch Matt Harvey as much as they need to. If they don't want to have as good as a chance, they'll sit Matt Harvey throughout the entire playoffs and listen to his agent. Mm. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's like, are you going to play him or aren't you going to play him? Because you can't put him out there for, what, 3-4 innings a game? You're going to end up tiring out your bullpen before you even make it through the first round of the playoffs. So it's not just about whether what Matt Harvey's doing. This could affect your entire team going into the playoffs. If you pitch Matt Harvey 3-4 innings, then you're depending on your bullpen for another five, six innings, which shouldn't happen. It's like, if you're going to pitch Matt Harvey, pitch him. He shouldn't have any restrictions. But if you're going to have this whole deal about him having restrictions on how much he can play a game, don't play him at all. It's going to cause more stress than you need going into the playoffs. And I think it's kind of sad to say that, because I think Matt Harvey brings another good arm to the mound who gives you a solid chance of making it through the first couple rounds, maybe even to the World Series down the line. So I think it's sad to say that you'd have to sit him just to keep from causing more issues in the playoffs.
Where was I going to go with this? Let me bring up this comment here. Dr. Frank Jobe, who was the surgeon who actually, was the mastermind of the Tommy John surgery. And you guys might remember when we had Tommy John on, and the tremendous conversation we had with Tommy John himself about this sort of thing, and about Dr. Frank Jobe and the whole procedure itself. Dr. Frank Jobe had a comment the other day, and this was over at NJ.com. Quote, if they're going to break, meaning pitchers, if they're going to break, they're going to break. That's it. So in other words, he's even saying, trying to preserve the guy in some sort of convoluted sort of sense that, oh my gosh, we're banking time with Matt Harvey, is ludicrous. That's a ludicrous concept. Now, we've also read comments, too, where apparently, and I don't know whether, Nick, whether you've picked up on any of this or whether you've been following it enough to read some of the comments, and I'm trying to find one of them right now here, where Matt Harvey himself actually has come out and said he's not pleased with the management of the situation. He's not happy about it. So I'm starting to wonder, well, who the heck is calling the shots here? Are you trying to tell me that the team manager, Collins, Alderson, the general manager, and the client, Matt Harvey, don't have any say over the agent? Are you kidding me? Huh? What? Something doesn't smell right to me. Something doesn't smell right. There's got to be one of the three. One of the three have got to be in cahoots or at least in agreement with Scott Boras. Wouldn't you say, Nick, wouldn't you say?
I would say so. And I also think, if you remember, I don't remember exactly what he said, but they played a clip of Matt Harvey getting interviewed in the locker room, and he completely went back on his word. At first, he said something along the lines of, he understands why he's not pitching, and he's got the doctor told him he's on an innings limit. And then he came out and said something along the lines of, I'll be out there to pitch. I don't know anything about the limit. I don't know what's going on. And then he said, I'm on a limit. I mean, he's just been so back and forth and flip-flop that I truly believe Matt Harvey just doesn't know what's going on. And I don't think he's got a say in this. It sounds like, especially with the quote you gave, I don't think anybody in the Mets front office or down at the top of the dugout steps has a say in this. If it was being mandated by the doctor, I feel like that would have been well known by now. They'd probably state that given all the questions surrounding it. I think it is Boras. And I don't understand, Mike, I'm with you. I don't understand where he assumes this power. Scott Boras is the biggest agent in baseball. Biggest agent in baseball, hands down. I mean, everybody that wants a big contract, you go, you get Scott Boras, and you're going to get a big contract. That's what he does. And he's very good at his job, whether you like him or you don't like him. But to assume this kind of power and this kind of responsibility as a sports agent is a travesty unto itself. But to allow Scott Boras to dictate the way you run your team is worse. As awful as this is, and as much as we want to rip Scott Boras to shreds, I'm looking at the Mets. If I'm the Mets, I say, who cares? I don't care. What's Scott Boras going to do? Say, oh, my guy's not going to play for you anymore. Oh, we're going to go to another team. That's not how that works. I don't understand why. It's one thing for Boras to try to assume power, and if it works, it works. Good for him. He got what he wanted. But if I'm the Mets, why do I let Scott Boras have that power? Why do I give him power he doesn't have and then act like I'm the victim and saying, oh, we can't pitch him because his client or his agent said so? You can pitch him. That's no excuse. You absolutely can pitch him. Pitch Matt Harvey if you want to pitch Matt Harvey. And I think Sean made an excellent point. If you're going to shut him down, if you're not going to play him, don't play him. None of this five-inning crap. And I heard somebody on MLB Network say today as well, or it might have even been yesterday, if we're going to do this with Matt Harvey, it's not a six-week program. You don't throw this in at the end of the year and say, oh, yeah, by the way, you got to keep him under this number. As you're throwing him freely for most of the season. You start 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months prior to this and say, here's what we can do with him this season. Let's plan accordingly. And honestly, for all the hysteria and all the hype around every other pitcher on that staff, it's going to sound terrible, and it's a bit of an overstatement, but if he goes down, God forbid, apparently they'll be okay. So I don't know what the Mets are really worried about in this entire situation. Throw the guy. If you want to throw the guy, throw the guy. If you don't want to throw the guy, say so. Stop acting like the victim and acting like Scott Boras has all this power that he doesn't have.
You play to win the game.
Bingo. The thing that I'm finding positively incredible through the whole thing is if, in fact, this is all being orchestrated, manipulated, Scott Boras. Well, for God's sake, the New York Mets did not sign a contract with Scott Boras. They signed a contract with Matt Harvey. And why this guy suddenly is coming in and making personnel decisions for this team against their wishes, I don't understand it. It's a very dangerous precedent that is being set here, that managers suddenly player managers, their reps are suddenly going to be become part of the team decision making process. Very, 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 very disturbing potential precedent-setting situation if that's the case.
Stupid. Outrageous. Baloney. Liar. Baby. Dumb. Wi-Fi. Are you kidding me?
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. Thank you, Judge Judy. Couldn't agree more. All right. Well, hopefully, we'll find out whether that gets... I guess we're going to see how that goes. The drama continues. I thought we were done with it. That was my personal opinion. I wanted to bring up this great little story that I came across this afternoon. And I'm going to be perfectly blunt. I haven't watched enough of the AL East. I haven't watched enough of the Toronto Blue Jays. But I would suspect that perhaps maybe somebody like Nick or Sean, you may have. I have gotten a chance to see this Blue Jays outfielder, Chris Colabello. The great little story about this guy over in USA Today. Chris Colabello would be what I guess would be referred to in Major League Baseball and in many other leagues as, a journeyman, or I guess maybe a better phrase would be a late bloomer. Chris Colabello is right now 31 years of age, playing for the Toronto Blue Jays, and it looks like he's going to put in a pretty hefty assignment there. He's already got 92 games he's appeared in with the Blue Jays this season. Prior to that, he had 55 games he appeared in the Minnesota Twins in 2013. 59 games last season with the Minnesota Twins. This year he's up to 92 games with the Minnesota Twins. He has, at-bats 308, 14 home runs, 53 RBIs, hitting .325, slugging percentage of .519. This is a really, really neat story. The guy really, really rolled around the minor leagues, I guess, since, when was he drafted? He was drafted, oh, my goodness gracious. Free agent, well, he was free agent acquisition in 20, so he was never drafted in 2012. Free agent acquisition in 2012. Neat story. Just a neat, neat story. Have you had a chance to see this guy at all, Nick?
A little bit here and there, some highlights, a couple games, not too much. Especially recently, actually, it's disappointing because I get back to school thinking I'll have this, you know, I come back to college at St. Joe's thinking, you know, I'm by myself. I'm on my own. I can watch TV when I want to. I don't have to share the TV with a little sister. I'll get to watch all this baseball. And frankly, I very rarely get some time to watch a game. So when I do, it's usually the Pirates, the Cardinals, the teams that are always on Sunday Night Baseball or one of the big networks. I have seen a little bit of Colabello, not a ton, but from what I've seen, he's a real good player. And just looking at the numbers and what the kid's capable of doing, he's going to be a really good player.
Yeah, kid at 31, huh? yeah.
Everybody's a kid in this league. Come on.
I got you.
For a living. They paid millions of dollars to play a game. They're kids.
Sure. Although I'll bet you this guy's not making millions of dollars. That's just my gut feeling. I'm actually trying to find his minor league stats is what I'm actually looking for. I'm over at Baseball Reference and trying to find his minor league numbers. But it's just a really, really I just thought it was a really neat story. You know, it seems that it, you know, probably more in baseball than just about any other sport, you get at least one story like this a year. You know, it seems like every season you'll get at least one a year where you'll hear about some guy who's making it up from the minors. He's been down in the minors forever and ever and ever. And, you know, basically has had a professional career as a minor league player. And because of one circumstance or another, and for gosh sakes, in this particular case, you know, Colabello is not a September call-up. I mean, you would expect this kind of a story on a team where there are September call-ups. He's on a team right now, as we pointed out, that potentially could be rivaling for the World Series this year. Just a really, really neat story, and so I wanted to just point that one out this evening. There you go. Wanted to get that one out there. I don't know. Have you seen him? Have you seen him, Sean? Have you had a chance?
Unfortunately, not in a similar situation as Nick, but with all the traveling around and stuff I do, I'm lucky to catch up games, but mostly highlights. And, you know, this is kind of a great story to hear. I mean, like, you hear a lot of guys who will get drafted into the minors and they spend their entire career playing in the minor leagues. So just to hear a story of a 31-year-old coming up and actually making a difference on a team that is playoff bound is quite impressive for someone who went undrafted for so long. I mean, you said he was drafted in what, 2012? So he would have been 27, 28 at the time.
Actually, he wasn't drafted. He was an unrestricted free agent.
Free agent. But, yeah, I mean, just an older guy even being picked up that late and then all of a sudden coming up and making a difference. It's an awesome story.
Sure is. So best of all the best from here at Frat House Sports. And like I said,
we love you.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if we love him, but it's not your normal September call-up sort of situation where you see some of these guys. One other one I wanted to throw out there because, you know, we talked a couple of minutes here, I forget when it was, either last week or the week before, about the White Sox fan who went out and allegedly buried a White Sox baseball cap in the outfield of the new Wrigley Field. Well, of course, Wrigley's going through all of their renovations and what have you. And this one construction worker or project manager, project worker who's working on this project fess up to the fact that he actually went out onto Wrigley Field and, well, dug a little hole out there and buried a White Sox cap in right smack in the middle of Wrigley Field. So we had a little bit of desecration of the of Wrigley Field as it's undergoing its transformation to being, I guess all those renovations are supposed to be scheduled for unveiling by next beginning of next season. Well, we had another kind of desecration that came to it. At least that's according to Cubs manager Joe Maddon. It came from the rock group AC/DC. He was not too pleased with the way AC/DC apparently left the condition of the field the other evening after after they performed there. Joe Maddon made the comment, I don't know if they were out there taking ground balls and nine-inch heels. They totally messed up our infield. I've seen a bad hop at third base, a bad hop at second base. Prior to that, I'd not seen one bad hop all year. The grass on the outfield is bad. It's not even. Some long, some short. It's not what it used to be. So, you know, I got to be honest with you. You know, I've heard Joe Maddon. I've seen Joe Maddon. He never struck me as an AC/DC fan anyhow. I don't know. What do you think, guys?
I mean, that's the risk you're going to run into throwing any sort of music festival inside of a ballpark or stadium. I mean, you got to get all the setup crews in there. You got to get stages set up, all sorts of, you know, fencing and guardrails and security. I mean, it's a huge mess. I mean, if you're going to run that kind of risk planning an event like that in a ballpark, I mean, stuff like that might happen. And who knows, maybe Joe Maddon's just blaming the way his team is playing on the fact that the concert was there. But at the same time, you know.
You sounded like a Cardinals fan. You sounded like a Cardinals fan.
but hey, we don't talk about conspiracies here at Fred House Sports.
No, absolutely not. Never. We never have. I will, you know.
Never have, never will.
I will say this: I did get a report that Maddon immediately eliminated them from his Pandora selection. So AC/DC does not play. Yeah, it is. It does not play in his car any longer on Pandora. That's so that he can listen to a lot more of Celine Dion. Anyhow, yeah. Thank you very much. I'll be here all week. I see Nick didn't want to jump in on that one. You didn't want to jump in on it? Okay. What do you say we get over to our series streak challenge? How about we do that one? Guys, what the heck happened? I purposely gave one away last week. I purposely gave one away to get you know, just to make things interesting. And I was the only one that won. I don't get it.
Oh, no!
It's true. let's see. Nick, Sean, and Caleb all lost last week. I'm now 13-11, back up at the top again. Nick and Sean, you guys are 12-12, and Caleb is 11-13. And as I have mentioned before, folks, if you think this is easy, you need to think again. It is not easy, as you can tell from this, trying to pick one team that will win a full series.
That feeling you were just born for greatness.
Well, that would be me. Yes, that would be me. I have that feeling. But anyhow, here's how it stands right now, and here are the predictions for this week. Caleb indicated he is going with the – and I got to tell you, I think this is a gutsy move on his part. He's going with the Texas Rangers over the Houston Astros. And if I'm not mistaken, we looked at that schedule before. I just took it down. But the Rangers, I believe, are on the road. They are on the road. So that's a gutsy move on Caleb's part. Caleb right now, who is two games under the leader myself and going with the Rangers over the Astros. Sean, what do you got for us?
Against my better judgment, but also to make it a little bit interesting, Caleb might call me an idiot, but I'm going to take the Cubs over the Pirates.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cubs over the Pirates. All right, there you go. Nick, what do you say?
I was going to do the same, but I feel like every time Sean and I are on together, we wind up making the same pick. I'll go opposite Caleb, and I'll say Astros over the Rangers.
Yeah, this is getting interesting. Over Rangers. Okay. Well, I had made my pick, as I usually do, before any of you guys did. And I, like Sean, picked the Cubs over the Pirates. I'm telling
no.
you.
You can every play time.
The, you can play the dun-dun-dun again, because guess what? I'm really shocked that Caleb didn't pick the Pirates over the Cubs. That's what I'm shocked at. I'm shocked that he didn't.
But you know what that also means? I can't overtake you at all because our situation is the same this week.
Well, yeah, but we'll carry it into the playoffs. We'll carry it into
Okay.
We'll take it all the way to the end. What the heck?
Okay.
The series just get longer, so, you know, there'll be fewer.
That's true.
Fewer selections. There you go. There you go. look at that. Look at that lineup. So we got Caleb Rangers over Astros. Nick's going Astros over Rangers. And then Sean and I are coming out against Caleb. So we got three guns going up against Caleb. How do you like that one? Caleb, you needed to be on this program tonight. That's the deal. He needed to be on this show. He needed to represent. We're all coming at Caleb this week. He'll hate us. He'll be hating on us. All right.
I don't do that.
Well, he will. We got to wrap this one up for this week. I'll tell you right now, though, you want to be here with us tomorrow night. Let me think. Who do I have on here? I got Uncle Mark joining me with Nick Swartz. And, we're going to do a special, Fred House Sports' Red Zone Blitz program tomorrow night, our second one of the season. And we will be X-ing and O-ing some of the good things and many of the bad things that occurred in the NFL this past weekend. We'll be giving you a little bit of a glimpse into what will be taking place come Thursday night and into the weekend. But for the most part, what we do is we basically, we do an autopsy of last weekend. And like I said, there was a lot to autopsy because there were a lot of upsets. And there was a lot of weeping. There was a lot of weeping this past weekend. But you want to be here for that, our NFL program. Second one of the entire season. You want to be here for that, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Same time next night, Thursday night, Frat House Sports Show. We'll be back here with you, Uncle Mark and Sidekick and myself. And at that point, then, we're going to be getting into our famous Frat House Sports' NFL Picks of the Week. We'll be getting into that. We'll be getting into 4 minutes of football. And we'll be getting into a bunch of other stuff. So 2 hours right there for you. Frat House Sports Show coming to you here Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Friday night, it'll be Caleb and Nick Swartz and myself here for the Frat House Sports' Fantasy Friday program. You want to be here for that one. And then Saturday, of course, I'll be back here with you 2 p.m. Eastern time for my relaxed Frat House Saturday program. Guys, thanks very much. Sean, we look forward to getting you back in here real soon. Have a good time out there in Chicago. I guess that's where you're heading to next, right? That's where you're heading to. Okay. And for all of you out there, thank you very much. And thanks to Sean. For all of you out there, you know what you got to do. Get out there and enjoy your baseball.